south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Well, today we have some very interesting emails and comments that I promise to take care of. You're going to like this. And by the way, if you hear some construction noises going on in the background, hammers, chisels, Three Stooges, sound effects and such, that's because, yes, I'm broadcasting right next door to a construction site. And, you know, being an engineer in my past life, I do have a love for gadgets, and I decided to put in a very high-tech 16 3-megapixel camera surveillance system at a certain property, meaning a property owned by a certain SA corporation, if you know what I mean. Now, these days, of course, they have surveillance systems where you can check every single camera, zoom in, etc., on your smartphone or on any computer anywhere in the world. Now, admittedly, I don't have a smartphone, don't want one. However, if you travel a lot, you know, every hotel you go to these days has some kind of business or computer center, so you can check your cameras there if you like. And, of course, everyone else seems to have a smartphone or two, everyone but me, of course. So it's easy enough to borrow a phone for a minute or two, perhaps to check to see what kind of mischief your dogs, cats, lizards, or pythons have gotten into lately. Okay, so now you're thinking, man, if Johnny's putting in a huge surveillance system like that, he must be worried. Could it be that Johnny's got a security problem? Well, it's not that. Of course, you can never be too cautious. Now, the fact is, my particular subdivision is a gated community, and I have little worry that someone's going to come in and raid the place. But, oddly enough, a camera system like that sure does make an impression on the local gardeners, maintenance guys, and cleaning ladies. Scares the hell out of them. Now, if you've been listening to this show any length of time, remember, I've been doing it for 5 years or so now. If you've been keeping track, you'll have noticed I've told a few stories about how I've fired a few cleaning ladies over the past few years. All of them because of petty theft. And in some of those cases, the word petty is a huge exaggeration. And now, of course, with my new security system, I can watch every move the cleaning lady makes, or at least it'll be recorded for posterity. Well, the fact is, I'm just not worried a bit anymore that my cleaning lady's gonna make off with the family jewels or the laundry detergent. Oh, and by the way, some years ago, I did catch my cleaning lady stealing laundry detergent. So, how'd she get it out of the house? She had put a layer of the powdered stuff in the bottom of her purse. Can you believe that? But now that they're on camera, I can guarantee you they won't even be stealing a toothpick. Now, cleaning ladies don't go for the big stuff. They go for the basics. Vegetables, potatoes. I told the story once of one of my cleaning ladies who, every week without fail, would hide a small plastic bag full of potatoes below the outdoor wash basin. And then about a year or so ago, another cleaning lady I had, who was a great cleaning lady, by the way, I hated to lose her, but she did steal a throw rug. So how'd she think she was going to get away with that? Wouldn't that be obvious? Well, not so. It was a rolled-up spare rug I had in the laundry room that I never used. I guess she thought, well, if it's not being used, I'll take it. In the poor and lower middle classes, that's often the logic they use when they swipe something from someone who's better off than they are. So then how'd she get away with it? Well, I believe I never would have found out if it wasn't for the guard at the entrance to my subdivision. Well, it appears she rolled it up and threw it over the fence to an empty lot next door. And when she left that day, she walked over to the lot, tucked it under her arm, and kept going. Now, the next day, the guard at the front gate clued me in when I was driving out. He said, "Disculpame, Don Johnny," which means, "Excuse me, Mr. Johnny. Did you give your cleaning lady permission to leave the subdivision with a carpet?" So, that's how she got caught. And by the way, guards are supposed to tell you those things. They're watching for stuff like that, and when they see something unusual, they ask that person for a note from the owner. Because, you know, a lot of us do give things away, like toasters and coffee makers, shoes, etc. So, when you do give stuff away like that, you'll write a note or call ahead to the guard and say, the cleaning lady is carrying some stuff out. And by the way, like I mentioned in the past show, when you hire a cleaning lady or a maintenance guy, unless it's the very first job they've ever had before, from the very first day they report to work, they'll open their purse or lunch bag, backpack, whatever, for you to inspect. That's very commonplace down here in Latin America, and when they leave for the day, they'll open up that purse or backpack for you to inspect too. Now, of course, that's the same thing workers do at factories, including Walmart, Costco, Sears, I suppose even McDonald's. That's true down here and in the first world. Now, I have to admit, it's kind of awkward at first to go through your cleaning lady's purse or your maintenance guy's lunchbox. But as it turns out, they really do expect you to do that. So my advice, get over it. However, I've had the same maintenance guy now for about 8 years and picked him out as the guy I wanted to work for me permanently because he was the hardest working guy on the construction crew that built the place. He was the guy that carried 3 cement blocks instead of 2 like the rest of them. The guy that was always moving faster than the other workers. He would sprint when everyone else was walking. Got twice as much work done than the average guy, so I thought, I'm going to hire that guy. That said, he's been with me 8 years now. And because from the beginning he proved he was very honest and loyal, I would never embarrass him by asking to see what was in his backpack or lunchbox. Even though in the beginning, when he entered and left, he'd always stop and open the thing up. I can't tell you how weird that feels when a worker invites you to do an inspection. For us gringos anyway, it's kind of uncomfortable. Anyway, you'll find when you've had a worker that's around that long, they often become part of your family. And soon enough, their kids are even doing odd jobs for you. But a word of warning here, don't assume the kids are honest and trustworthy like their dad or mom might be. In fact, some small stuff went missing when I had my maintenance guy's 16-year-old son keep an eye on my place for a long weekend. So sometimes you let that stuff go and sometimes you don't. And each time, you get a little bit smarter. So bottom line, when you hire help like that, you're going to have to decide for yourself how strict your shakedown policy is when they enter and exit. Or perhaps they're long-time, very trustworthy employees and you don't have to do any of that. So bottom line, are you going to be Mr. Friendly and smile and wave when they come in your place and when they leave after work? Or are you going to pull the Homeland Security TSA bit? You know, put on the plastic gloves and do a cavity search. Now, as far as being a gringo jefe, a boss, it's well known that we're all pretty much soft touches when it comes to the help, which is why the locals love working for gringos. And as for Latin jefes, Latin bosses, well, they're in a constant state of suspicion and believe their help is stealing from them all the time. They'll tell you right out that it's just inevitable with the lower classes. They'll tell you if you're going to have help, you're going to get robbed. And they've pretty much resigned themselves to that. And since working class people know that's the boss's attitude, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Which is why when you hire someone that's been working for Latin families for a long time, they could come with some baggage and some very bad habits. And believe me, all seasoned household employees will come with glowing recommendations from former employers. In fact, it seems down here when an employee is fired, they always get a good recommendation. That's part of the deal. Most Latin bosses like to take the non-confrontational easy way out. Which leads me to this interesting email about construction in Latin America having to do with what I've said on various shows over the years. Goes like this. Hey Johnny, was listening to some of your 2011 archives about your house building experiences. Interesting and entertaining. Seems like you have a house in a gated, guarded, gabled private community in Guatemala or somewhere in Central America, right? Well, really, Johnny? What's the point? I also heard the story about your stolen building supplies stashed in a hole on the property. You say the property has a 24-hour guard and his family living on it the entire time of construction. Could you explain that, please? Signed, Panama Rick. Okay, Panama. I assume when you say, what's the point, you're thinking, why build a house in a gated, closed community? Is that it? We'll assume that, okay? Let's go through this a step at a time. Now, I always recommend that you live in a gated, guarded community if, of course, you want to have a nice house and a garden and a yard and everything. And, of course, if you have kids, a gated community is the way to go. Yes, there are lots of advantages. Many gated communities have their own health clubs, park space, pavilions for events, recreational spaces, and much more. Not to mention, gated communities have their own wells, and you're not at the mercy of that crappy, polluted, intermittent municipal water. However, if you want to live in the big city, you can live in a nice, tightly confined, middle-class neighborhood with common walls and such, but that's not my style of living, you see. Too noisy, too many families, too many chickens and dogs, and though those places are quite cheap, maybe $200 to $350 a month, they're considered lower middle class by our first world standards. So then, Panama Rick, isn't it part of the plan to live like a first world person down here in Latin America? And not like a white trash carny or a backpacker? Unless, of course, you are a dyed-in-the-wool backpacker type who's chronically short on shekels. Then a scruffy, crowded, lower-middle-class Latin neighborhood just might fit the bill. So, that said, I like to think that my show, The Expat Files Living in Latin America, mostly appeals to people who want to live a first-world life when they get down here and don't want to lower their standards. Which is why I prefer to live in a gated, guarded community myself. And note, you'll pay just a slight fraction of what you'd pay for virtually the same thing up in the first world. So, why not? For example, I've proved by getting involved in more than a dozen building projects myself that I can build a beautiful first world style home, 3,500 to 4,000 square feet, for around $120,000. And if you do your own ciphering, you'll see that's like $30 a square foot for a first world upper middle class property. Now, a house like that in the States, depending where you are, probably will cost you anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000. That is, if you contracted it out from scratch. So, the question, Panama Rick, is not why would you go and do that, it's why not? Now, for those of you who would like a big spread, a couple acres, whatever, that would be out in the boonies, and you probably would not be in a guarded, gated community. Then, you have to understand that if you leave that place for a couple days to a week or more, unattended, that is, eventually, you could be a target for thieves. But then again, if you had a big spread up in the boonies, let's say in Minnesota or Cleveland, could you leave that place unattended for a couple of days, a week or two, even more? Well, if you pull a move like that, you're taking a chance anywhere in the world. Nope, you're not in Mayberry and it's not the 1960s anymore. So then what do you do if you own such a place and you're going to be gone for a week or two or whatever? Well, most people who have big spreads have their cleaning lady or maintenance guy stay on if they go away for a while. Remember, it seems like every house over 1,000 square foot has a maid's quarters, so they'll not necessarily be staying in your house. In fact, you can set up your house so that it's completely locked out from the main parts of the house. In fact, down here, most maid's quarters have an outside steel door entrance, with the rest of the house set up so that you can lock all the doors and the maid only has access to her own personal room and the laundry room. In fact, I wish you were down here so I could give you a personal tour of some of these places and how you lock out your house while you're away. And by the way, when gringos buy an existing place, they almost always have to do some renovations, even if the place is brand new. Often you'll find, even with brand new houses that look quite nice from the outside, they've got a crazy-ass floor plan. Latins don't seem to be into ergonomics. Yep, there's that typical lag time there, too. In fact, one of the things that drives gringos nuts is that you'll go to a new subdivision loaded with first-world-style, upper-middle-class, even ritzy houses. Well, 3 out of 4 times you'll find the guest bathroom on the first floor can only be accessed by walking down a half a flight of stairs into a tiny little cramped, dark, pissant cubbyhole. And it's so small you can barely turn around. Worse yet, there's a tiny little window or no ventilation at all. So, there's always a faint smell of urine and crap and fresh ass. Which is why, as I mentioned before, so many gringos do a bit of remodeling before they move into a place. Priority 1, a high-powered exhaust fan for that dungeon bathroom. But, where was I? Oh yeah, living out in the boonies. In fact, I know some gringos living out in the boonies who hire a trusted guy or a neighborhood kid to just sit in the house or hang around the patio when they're gone. I know one gringo who sets up a cot, gives him a mattress, a radio, a flashlight, a hot plate, a cooler, even a box with some snacks and some food, and the guy kind of camps out in the garage while they're gone. And the reason why this particular gringo does that is because he has a very small house that he built himself, and he was not smart enough to build a maid's quarters into it, which would have solved that problem and made life a lot easier. Oh, and by the way, he pays this 16-year-old kid about 10 bucks a day to house it. Oh, and by the way, if you go to OLX.com, my favorite Latin American Craigslist clone, you can contract young traveling gringo tourists or a local Latin college kid or two to house sit for you. Usually they come in pairs, by the way. Of course, that's not for everyone. I personally don't like strangers staying in my house, even though expat gringos report pretty good luck finding house sitters that way. Who knows, you might have dogs, cats, tarantulas, or pythons that need feeding. But I digress as usual. Now, as for Panama Rick's last email point, He mentioned that story I told back in 2011 about the tools that got stolen from one of my construction sites. I guess he's wondering how that happened with a 24/7 guard living on the premises, with his family, by the way. So how'd that happen? Well, Rick, you know the old story. People are poor down here, and Latin construction workers are the working poor, too. And there's always a bad apple or two in any construction crew. The thing to remember is that when you hire a construction company to build your house, if that's what you're going to do, he'll put the guard there. They'll build a tin shack for the guy, and he'll live there 24/7. You'll smell the burning firewood, see the clothes drying on the line outside, and often there's a few driveway chickens, too. Now remember, this guy's going to live there for a whole year, sometimes with his family. Talk about poor. He's got one lone water spout and no toilet and no sewage system. Bottom line, the world is his outhouse. That's just the way things are down here in Latin America, even in gated, protected, high-end communities. So then what's inside that tin shack? Well, it's one big open room smaller than a single-car garage. And that 24/7 guard lives there, sometimes with his family, amongst the bags of cement, tools, steel, and all the other construction materials that have to be kept out of the rain. Now, most of the time when you hear stories of things being stolen at a house building site, it's because the owner jumps the gun and starts bringing household possessions and tools and such weeks before the house is completely sealed up and ready to move in. Come on, how safe is that? In fact, I've seen it myself. The owner shows up with a pickup truck and starts unloading stuff into a spare room, and the windows aren't even in yet. Now remember, if you're building a house down here, sometimes there'll be a dozen or more workers around the place, and you won't know any of them. Workers hired by your contractor, usually, and delivery guys. And at times, of course, they'll have access to rooms that have valuable things in them, especially if you've dropped some stuff off like so many people do. So sometimes things can and do go missing. So, could it be that 24/7 guard living on the premises stealing from you? Well, it could be anyone or no one. Because, in fact, I know of many gringos who've built houses and have had no pilferage problems at all. Then again, I know other gringos who were plagued by it. Mostly gringos, by the way, who didn't show up much to check out the building site. Take the example of one of my gringo buddies who showed up on the job site on weekends only. One Saturday, he arrived to find there were 200 cement blocks missing. That's around 2,000 pounds. How'd that happen? And the so-called 24/7 guard, what'd he say? The usual. No sé, no lo vi nada. That means, I don't know, I didn't see nothing. But you know, these days you could say the discussion about building a house is moot. I don't suggest anyone do that anymore because the real estate bubble is so big. Any time now when it blows, you'll be able to buy exactly what you want for 20, 30, or 40 cents on a dollar, so why in the hell would you ever want to build? Though that's not to say if you scoop up a really nice deal like that, you won't want to go in and do first world improvements. That always seems to be the case, because remember, we're dealing with Latins here, and although their houses and structures might look totally first world to you, they're always short on the details, but you knew that already, right? So then, why go through all the hassle of building when you could buy something brand new that's never been lived in and possibly never even been walked through by a prospective client? That is the state of things down here. You really do have to get boots on the ground yourself. By the way, when you come down to one of my Latin Insider seminars, we do a boots on the ground real estate walkthrough, so you will see for yourself. Okay, and now an email that's been forwarded to me by my friend John Galt. The email originally came from a guy named Gringo Without a Name. That's his name, Gringo Without a Name. How about that? He asked this. If you have an S.A. corporation in Latin America, that would be a Sociedad Anónima corporation. That's an anonymous corporation. How do you know if the lawyer that's controlling your S.A. corporation for you, in other words, he's got signatory rights over it, how do you know if that corporation and the bank account that's been set up in its name is secure? What keeps a Latin lawyer, he says, from taking the money from that SA account once they take control or have signatory over your SA corporation? Again, that's from Mr. Gringo Without a Name. Well, let me start by asking you this. What if you had a corporation up in the States and your lawyer or your accountant, whoever had signatory power, raided your account or pulled some other shenanigans? You would have to hire another lawyer, go to court, pay a lot of money, Maybe that crook would get disbarred or maybe just skip. Yes, up in the States, we've all heard personal stories about crooked lawyers. In fact, you read about it in first world papers all the time. So does that happen down here? Well, of course. But 95% of the time, it's happening to gringos on the well-worn tourist trail. Somehow it seems where there are large gatherings of gringos, it brings out the worst in the Latin population in general, including Latin professionals. Now, as far as personal eyewitness accounts, I saw it happen to three of my close gringo friends in Costa Rica. So it is all about trust, which is why you have to find a faithful, ethical lawyer. Now, you might recall 100 or so shows ago, I mentioned I had two lawyers in Costa Rica. A nice straight arrow lawyer who wrote poetry, taught law at the university. Just a real nice, soft-spoken, gentle guy. And if you recall the story, he once phoned me up and said, "Johnny, we're in a tough spot and some bribes have to be paid and I'm not that kind of lawyer. So, we'll need another lawyer who works that side of the street. I know just the guy." So, who had to get bribed? Well, it was a local Costa Rican zoning board. Turns out when they found a gringo was doing some construction, they disallowed the building permit and just wanted to get paid a few $100 each under the table. And when the cash came through, miraculously, the zoning board gave the A-OK. So then, how do you find that good, honest, ethical lawyer who'll stand by you through thick and thin as a friend? Now, believe it or not, what most green gringos do is they check out a lawyer on the internet. Bad move. Or check out the local classified ads and throw a dart. Worse yet, many go into a gringo expat bar and just ask around, "Hey, who do you have for a lawyer, gringo?" Probably 75% of gringos get their lawyers that way. That said, with my 25 plus years down here, I've met some very bad and some very good lawyers. Now, one of the best proven ways to pick up a nice ethical lawyer is to come down to one of my expat insider seminars. If you come down, you'll definitely meet some of my recommended guys. Now, that's not to say these guys are perfect. Most of them operate on mañana time. That means frustrated, high-strung gringos are often going to get pissed because things don't happen yesterday, today, or even tomorrow. But eventually, things do get done. This is Latin America, so relax a bit. Anyway, like I said, if you come down to one of my Latin seminars, you'll personally get to meet, eat, and schmooze with some of these people. That said, I'd like to read you an excerpt from an email that come from my friend John Galt, who, of course, you probably all know by now, runs the website www.thenewexpat.com. Now, he's been down here in Central America something like 3 years or so, and since he's located permanently down here now, he's run the gambit of things that gringos find they necessarily need to hire a lawyer for. So let me give you John Galt's take on lawyers. Now remember, he came down to one of my first Expat Insider seminars, and one of the first things I did was hook him up with our seminar lawyer. Now since Mr. Galt is the one who sent me the email from the gringo with no name, he's got his own take on Latin lawyers, and here's what he's got to say. "Dear Mr. Gringo Without a Name, it's a great question you have about lawyers, and even a greater question for people like me, living where supposed illegalities are sometimes taken for granted. Now, pertaining to your question, my Latin lawyer has total hypothetical control over my hypothetical SA corporations and hypothetical bank accounts. Exactly the case in question you referred to. So, do I sometimes think about that? Well, yes. Do I lose hypothetical sleep over it? Not so much anymore, for a myriad of reasons. Now, if you have a lot of money, which I hypothetically don't, obviously hiring a lawyer is a step that can't be taken lightly. Now, in my case, when I first came down, I listened to many people and made my decision to select my Latin lawyer, whom I'll call Joe. Now, I had met some of his clients when down here. I had also met Johnny. And I'd met some of the long-time expats down here, and I mean long-time and well-respected, and they all vouched for Joe's ethics. Still, it was my personal decision to use Joe in my newly chosen country. Now, recently, my decision to use Joe was bolstered even more. I was worried for a while. My lawyer was running for high political office, but the voters in this Central American country seemed to feel he was just not corrupt enough to represent them. Though it would have been nice to have direct access to one who had a front row seat to the public trough, in a way, his losing actually made me feel better about having him as my lawyer. End note. Finally, I'd like to say I would have never made that decision had I not come down to Johnny's seminar and met these people in person, including meeting many of Johnny's long-term expat friends, past seminar attendees too, and Lawyer Joe and his staff. That said, I hope that sheds a little more light on the lawyer question. Thanks, John Galt. All right, speaking of John Galt and lawyers, remember to go to www.thenewexpat.com and you'll find a real live English-speaking Latin lawyer there. He'll be writing a blog every week or two, covering everything gringos, especially new expats, should and would want to know regarding the various steps and processes gringos and expats sooner or later find they need a lawyer for. So do check out that legal blog to find out how gringos and expats wind their way through the Latin legal system. So go to www.thenewexpat.com and you'll find you can communicate with him directly too. Do check out his contact information and ask him a question if you like. And finally, you know, my January 2016 Latin Insider Seminar will get underway in about 2 months now. Looks like we're a little more than 3/4 filled up already. So don't dawdle. Go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 Latin Seminar link at the top of the page to get the full information and sign-up details. Now, remember, the early bird sign-up discount ended on November 1st. But as I mentioned on the last show, I hate to say it, John Galt has a small block of seminar tickets available for sale, and he's willing to pass on that early bird discount that he obtained from me a long time ago. If you're interested in getting in on his great deal, just email him directly at johngalt@startmail.com. That's johngalt@startmail.com. Oh, and believe it or not, I've already got 4 repeat offenders signed up. Those are people that have already taken one of my seminars and obviously are very serious about moving down to Latin America. So even though seminar attendees get the business end of the proverbial fire hose, they keep on coming back for more. How about that, huh? So get in while you can. There's only a few spots left. Remember, the seminar is limited to 25 people. Oh, and finally, do tune in to my Expat Files YouTube channel. Check out the running slideshow along with my commentary. One lady listener emailed me just 2 days ago and said, it adds another clever dimension to the whole Expat Files experience. So go to YouTube, plug in the Expat Files, and do subscribe.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!